නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So last time we have basically completed one sutta based on the Bojjhangas, enlightenment factors, and I have taken a different sutta which is talking certain other aspects of the Dhamma, some understanding in the Dhamma, and it is called the Vappa Sutta, available in Anguttara Nikaya Chatukka Nipata. So this is also an interesting sutta, happened in a different way. Actually, this Vappa is one person who is a follower of the Nigantas. So basically, a disciple of Nigantas. Probably you have heard about the Nigantas, who are basically the naked ascetics, and they too are talking about the morality. And this Vappa is a close follower of those Nigantas. And while Buddha was dwelling in Kapilavattu, in the Shakyan city, Kapilavattu, and there he is residing at Nigrodharama, which was built by the Shakyans, so basically the relatives of the Buddha, and they offered Nigrodharama to the Buddha and the Sangha. So during this time, Buddha and the Sangha were dwelling there, and during that time, and Venerable Maha Moggallana had a discussion with this so-called Vappa, who is a disciple of the Nigantas. And Venerable Maha Moggallana mentioned to him, "Idassa Vappa kayena sanguto, vachaya sanguto, manasa sanguto, avijja viraga avijja upada. Passasi no thvang Vappa, tang thanang yato nidanang, පුරිසං දුක්ඛවේදනීය ආසවා අස්සාවෙයුම් අභි සම්පරායන්ති." So basically, Venerable Moggallana is taking a kind of a deep subject here and talking about here three kinds of a restrainment: body restraint, restraint in the speech, restrainment in the mind. And suppose that someone is restrained, already restrained in body, speech, and mind. And not only that, he was able to abandon the ignorance, and true knowledge has arisen in him. So that means it is not mere restrainment, it is not mere sila, but he has gone to another level. That is, the ignorance is abandoned, and the true knowledge has arisen. Now the question Venerable Moggallana is asking, and do you see anything on account of which taints productive of painful feeling might flow in upon such a person in future lives? Now this is a kind of a challenging question, because he's talking about certain wisdom aspects where the mind is basically equipped with fair amount of wisdom now. The ignorance is fairly abandoned, and he's maintaining good bodily, verbal, and mental conduct. So, but anyway, are you seeing any kind of a possibility which is going to give him a painful feeling in the future lives? Now, indicating some understanding in the Vappa's mind, so he says, "Yes, it is possible. I do see such a possibility. In the past, one did an evil deed whose results has not yet ripened. On that account, taints productive of painful feeling might flow up in upon a person in some future life." Now you know that even a Vipassana yogi, he is capable of maintaining a mind which is free from defilements, and he's maintaining good moral conduct. So what will happen to him in the future after his death? Will he be completely reborn in a heavenly realm, in a fortunate state? Or is there any possibility that he too can get into a kind of a bad, woeful state? Now, according to this discussion, Vappa is pointing out, in case this person has unripened certain potential bad karma, there is a possibility that bad karma giving results in the future, in a future life, giving some bad outcome, painful outcome. Now, that was the kind of an argument, kind of a discussion happened between Venerable Moggallana and this Vappa. And while before this discussion is underway, the Buddha emerged from his seclusion and he went to the attendance hall. Now, it seems like this discussion has happened between Venerable Moggallana and Vappa in the attendance hall, where many other monks are also gathered. But Buddha was at another place. But anyway, at this moment, Buddha wake up from emerged from his samapatti, the seclusion, and then he came to this assembly hall. And he immediately sat down and asked the question directly from Moggallana. What, Moggallana, was the discussion that you were engaged in just now? And what was the conversation of yours that was underway? It seems like Buddha was interested in this discussion and to participate in it and giving some understanding, some teaching based on this discussion. So the scenario unfolds like that, where Venerable Moggallana and Vappa, a Nigantha's follower, is having a discussion. While that discussion is going on, Buddha comes in. And he asks directly from Moggallana, so what is the kind of discussion that you were underway? So this also indicates that the Buddha can read and understand and hear what others are talking. But to clarify the whole thing, now he is asking from directly Venerable Moggallana, so that others also can understand what's really going on. Now, once this is asked, Venerable Moggallana explained the whole thing. So, I have asked this question from Vappa, and he answered like that. While we were in this discussion, Bante, you have arrived. So, this is what Venerable Moggallana is answering. Now, Buddha takes the problem to his hand now. He is basically asking Vappa, now, if you would admit what should be admitted and reject what should be rejected, and when you do not understand the meaning of my words, you would question me about them further. How this happened and what is the meaning, when, and if there are anything to clarify, you can directly ask from me. If so, I can like to have a discussion. I like to have a discussion with you. So are you ready? So quite interesting, because the theme that Venerable Moggallana has taken seems to be a fairly interesting subject, and that may be the reason Buddha also participate, and he takes it to his hand and now wants to directly talk with Vappa. And then when this Vappa agrees, Bante, I will admit to the Blessed One what should be admitted and reject what should be rejected. And when I do not understand the meaning of these words, I will ask, I will question. So Vappa agreed. Now the discussion happens between Vappa and the Buddha. Now the Buddha is asking from Vappa, Tankim manyasi Vappa, Ye kaya samarambha pachaya uppajjanti asava vigata parilaha kaya samarambha පටිවිරතස්ස ඒවමස්සතේ ආසවා විගාත පරිලාහ නහොන්ති. Now the point is, if there is a possibility of any distressing, any feverish, any painful friction, agitation can happen in one's mind because of the taints, and because of bodily undertakings. Now, if he is refraining from bodily undertakings, if he is maintaining some good bodily conduct, now, what do you think, Vappa? Those stains, distressing and feverish, that might arise because of bodily undertakings, do not occur when one refrains from them. He does not create any newcomer. Now, that's a different point. Now, the first one is talking about the good bodily conduct. And there may be a certain part of stains which are producing some kind of a bodily pain, but this person is now take care of the body, is maintaining good bodily conduct, and he is refraining. Because he is refraining, now Buddha is telling, okay, so whatever taints which are productive of giving some bodily distressing, so those may not arise because he is maintaining some good bodily conduct. And further, he does not create any newcomer. He is not making any newcomer as well. That's another condition. And then he terminates the old comer. So how he is terminating the old comer? Having contacted it again and again. Now this is also a kind of an area that we need to explore. Now we may have to take few more suttas to clarify this point, because these are sometimes kind of controversial points. Because one way that Buddha denies that the complete eradication of karma by torturing the body or going through a kind of a bodily torture, any bodily conduct which is straining the body, giving some hard time to the body, and that way if someone is trying to abandon all the past karma, so Buddha denies it. But here it is mentioned, he is terminating the old karma having contacted it again and again. So we need to explore more about this statement. And then the wearing away is directly visible, immediate, inviting one to come and see, applicable, to be personally experienced by the wise. So that means when the impact of the karma is fairly faded away, one is experiencing some calmness, kind of a happiness, inner peace, because the impact of karma is fairly abandoned now. So that means he is understanding certain kind of a fruitful effect is there because of my undertaking. So these are areas that we need to see. So what is the area, what is the criterion, what is the methodology to abandon karma by going through contacting it again and again? So this is something to explore. Now, he is not doing any good new karma. Past karma also he has abandoned, terminated by contacting it again and again. And again, he is maintaining good bodily conduct, so that any kind of a taints, distressing and feverish, which can cause any bodily pain, those are also not going to happen. So this is the kind of an argument Buddha is building here. Kind of a logic, kind of an argument building here. Now he is asking the question, do you see, Vappa, anything on account of which taints productive of painful feeling might flow in upon such a person in future lives? Now he is asking that question which Venerable Moggallana is asking. And then Vappa is answering like, no, Bhante. Previously he said, yes, it is possible, because when Venerable Moggallana was asking, he basically said he is maintaining kind of a bodily conduct, good bodily conduct, verbal conduct, mental conduct. And he is having some understanding as well. Avijja is abandoned, vijja is basically available. Are you still feeling any kind of possibility to have some painful results in the future life. And then Vappa says, yes, it is possible. But when Buddha is pointing out this kind of an argument, where he is adding few more facts, that is, one thing is, his all karma is abandoned by contacting it again and again. He is not accumulating new karma. And he can see the wearing of the bad karma or the old karma by directly seeing it, immediately seeing it. And not only that, he is maintaining good bodily conduct, so that any kind of a taint arising because of wrong conduct cannot happen. Now, when the Buddha asked this question, Vappa is answering no. That means he can't have any future births which are giving him any sort of a painful result. And then Buddha went on to ask another question about talking about the verbal undertakings. Tankim manyasi vappa ye vachi samarambha paccaya uppajjanti asava vigata parilaha. So when someone is using bad words, maybe false, untruth, and further maybe divisive words, maybe harsh words, maybe useless words, useless chattering. So all these can produce some sort of influxes in one's mind. They can further strengthen those influxes and further influence the influxes. But someone is maintaining good verbal conduct. As a result of that it is impossible for those stains which are happening because of the verbal misconduct, they are not happening now because he is maintaining good verbal conduct. And further he adds, he does not add any new karma and he terminates the old karma, having contacted it again and again. And he can see the results. The wearing away is directly visible, immediate, inviting one to come and see, applicable, to be personally experienced by the wise. So basically, sandhittika, nijjara, akalika, ehi passika, opanaika, pachattang veditabha vinyuhi. So basically, this is not a mere argument. So basically, the practitioner is seeing kind of a result. As a result of his practice, he's experiencing some pleasant abiding. Not that he is completely in the kind of a blindfolded way that he is continuing, rather he is experiencing his results, some favorable results of his practice. Now when this question is also asked, that is when Buddha is asking, do you see up anything on account of which taints productive of painful feeling might flow in upon such a person in the future lives? And there again, Vappa is answering, no, Bhante. Now, you can understand the third question. So, Buddha is attributing it to the mental undertakings. There could be taints, distressing and feverish, that might arise because of mental undertakings. But he is not taking such wrong, say, thoughts. Instead, he is maintaining good mental conduct. He is refraining from any of those wrong thoughts, unwholesome thoughts. So he is maintaining very good mental culture. Not only that, all the bad, say, unwholesome karma, whatever the past karma, is basically abandoned, terminated. He is not accumulating any new karma. And he is experiencing the results, kind of a pleasant, favorable results he is experiencing, visible here and now. What do you think, Vappa? Are they going to have any future births which are productive of painful feeling into this particular person? Then Vappa is answering no. Now, as the fourth one, Buddha basically summarized the whole thing. With the fading away of ignorance, arising of true knowledge, Those stains, distressing and feverish that arise with ignorance as condition no longer occur, because the ignorance is totally abandoned. There could be certain stains which can happen, which can strengthen because of the ignorance, but now it can't happen because the ignorance is abandoned. His mind is equipped with wisdom instead. So whatever stains which are sharpening, which are further strengthening because of the ignorance, now it can't happen because ignorance is abandoned. And again, he is not accumulating any new karma. He terminates the old karma and he is experiencing the results directly. What do you think? Do you see, Vappa, anything on account of which taints productive of painful feeling might flow in upon such a person in future lives? No, Bhante. Now, after making these questions, now Buddha further clarifies, evaṁ sammā yumutta cittassa ko vappa bhikkhuno cha satata vihāra adhigata honti. Now basically all these explanations we can say now attributed to Arahant, a fully enlightened being. Now Buddha is explaining the Arahant, his situation, in terms of his restraints in the bodily conduct, verbal conduct, mental conduct. Further, he is not accumulating new karma. All karma also terminated. And further, he has completely abandoned ignorance. Instead, now the liberating knowledge is arisen in his mind. So this is the kind of state of an Arahant. Now Buddha further explains another aspect of the Arahant, telling like this: Sammā vimutta cittassa ko vappa bhikkhuno. Now his mind is completely liberated, perfectly liberated. Cha satata vihāra adhigata honti. Six kinds of constant dwellings are there. Now this is another area which we can ponder through this sutta. Now, with respect to an Arahant, Buddha say, there are six constant dwellings. Chakkuna rupan diswa neva sumano hoti na dummano. Upekkako viharati sato sampajano. So, he can see various sights through his eyes, but he is neither joyful nor saddened, but dwells equanimous, mindful and clearly comprehending. Now you can see a very, very important aspect here. Now the practice has completed. He is now an Arahant. He is perfectly enlightened. He can see things still. He is not closing his eyes. Rather, he can see things. But the interesting thing is, even though he is seeing things, that is neither joyful nor saddened, but dwells equanimous, mindful and clearly comprehending. So the stability of the mind is unchanged. Suppose that he is seeing kind of a bad sight, some sort of a disturbing sight, but his mind is unsaddened and his mind is neither joyful. He is basically maintaining equanimity. Similarly, he can see something really beautiful, quite attractive, but his mind is not disturbed, neither joyful nor saddened, maintains equanimity. And of course, you can understand if in case the sight is quite neutral, he can easily maintain the same state because there is no any kind of a jerk, any kind of a disturbance happening to the mind. So mind remains calm. And similarly, Buddha explains, having heard a sound with the ear, smelled an odor with the nose, experienced a taste with the tongue, felt a tactile object with the body, and again having cognized a mental phenomenon with the mind. Now he is getting to the mind as well. So mind also experienced certain mental phenomena. Manasa dhammang vinya neva sumano hoti na dummano upekkako viharati sato sampajana. Certain thoughts, certain ideas, certain mental objects can happen in the mind, but they are merely external phenomena. They are unable to disturb the mind. Mind remains calm, steady. So mind does not become joyful or saddened, but maintains its equanimity. So you can see the six kinds of constant equanimity in the Arahant's mind. Probably you can remember that we were often talking about the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, the last sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. A Buddha advised Venerable Ananda, telling, okay, there is a Indriya Bhavana, a noble meditation on the faculties, or noble development of the faculties. So how one is going to do? So there is a possibility that one may be able to see some beautiful sights. At that time, there's a possibility that your mind get uplifted. You become elated. You become joyful. You become happy. But don't stay there. Come back to the middle. That is the equanimity. Similarly, there may be sights which are disturbing, distressing, quite possible to arouse some kind of a pain or sorrow in one's mind. So one may be saddened, one may become sorrowful by seeing it. But don't stay in that sorrow. Come back to the middle. The middle is equanimous. So there may be a possibility, a kind of a sight, which is producing some mixture of good and bad, positive and negative kind of a feeling. But don't stay there. Come back to the almost like pure equanimity. So this is the kind of a theme mentioned in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, and it is also not a mere equanimous feeling that Buddha is talking. Rather, etang santang etam panitang yaddang upekka. It is sublime, it is calm, it is relaxing, which is the equanimity. Now, this equanimity is based on the wisdom. It is not a mere patience-based, endurance-based equanimity. Rather, this equanimity has come through vipassana. So he has seen clearly the nature of the phenomena. As a result of that, he is able to abide by the equanimity, which is produced, or which is a product of the vipassana, we can say. So there the theme is that the yogi, the practitioner, still have to continue that practice. Still his mind fluctuates, either to the positive side or to the negative side, still the mind fluctuates, but his duty is to again and again neutralize it. Again and again takes it to the middle. So that is his duty. And as Buddha continues in that area, so there he advised, okay, you can use three possibilities. Probably you can look at the whole scenario as anicchan sankatang parisamuppanna. Sankatang olarikam parisamuppanna. So this possibility, whatever has happened, is fairly kind of rough compared to the state of the equanimity. So once the mind is agitated, once the mind is sort of shifted, disoriented, so that disoriented state is somewhat rough, gross, or it is conditionally produced. And olarikang, sankatang, and it is conditioned. So don't stay there in this impermanent, conditioned, gross kind of a state. So you return back to the equanimous state, which is more calm, friction free, very relaxed, sublime, subtle. So this is the practice. So Buddha is recommending. And when one is continuing, so assume that one becomes a seka, a trainee. So then the trainee can easily do that. And there Buddha's advice is just become shameful when any kind of a shifting, disorientation happens. That may be enough for you. You don't need to struggle with various vipassana techniques, because now you already understood what to do. In case any kind of a shifting happens, be a little shameful, then the mind will return back. So the practice become more and more easier. Now today in the Vappasutta, Buddha is talking about the Arahant. So the Arahant also go through some sort of a site, he may encounter a site which may be producing, which can produce some kind of an agitation in the mind, or which can be quite beautiful, very attractive. That also possible. Or it can have some mixture. But the interesting point with the Arahant mind is, his mind is stable. There is no fluctuation. Chakkuna rupandiswa neva sumano hoti. Na dummano. Upekkako viharati sato sampajano. So that means he has completely fulfilled that training. So Indriya Bhavana has completely fulfilled by the Arahant. So his mind does not waver. And he doesn't need to do any practice to take it back to the middle. So unlike in the Sekha, unlike in the trainee, or unlike in the typical Vipassana yogi, this Arahant doesn't have to do anything because his equanimity is intact. There is no any disturbance. So his equanimity is fairly stable. And six constant dwellings. So as a result of that, Buddha say, so he is having a six constant dwelling. Even when he go through any kind of a form through his eyes, even if he encounter any sound through his ears, having smelled any odor through his nose, having experienced any taste with the tongue, or any tactile object with the body, or even a mental object appear in the mind. Irrespective of any of these external situations, the Arahant's mind remain calm, equanimous, without any kind of shifting. Now, so what is the state that he is going through at the end? So this is also a question sometimes people are asking. So what happened during the death moment of an Arahant? So kaya pariyattikam vedanam vediyamano kaya pariyattikam vedanam vediyami iti pajanati. Jeevita pariyantikam vedanam vediyamano jeevita pariyantikam vedanam vediyami iti pajanati. Kayasa bheda uddhang jeevita pariyadana idheva sabba vedaitani anabinanditani siti bhavissanti iti pajanati. Now this is a fairly strong state. Now he is at the last moment, so-called Arahant, and he recognized certain kind of a feeling which is actually terminating with the body, because that means the body going to die. Whatever the feeling currently available, which is not going to finish, fade away before the death, but it will only fade away after the death with the body. And further, I am feeling a terminating with the body, a feeling, a terminating with the body. So that means when the body terminates, when the body fades away, it dies, this particular painful feeling also will fade away. Before that, it won't. So that means he have to bear this final pain. And so he feels a feeling terminating with life. He understands, I feel a feeling terminating with life. So that means this body fading away, getting to die, and his life fading away and going to die, very much happening concurrently. And he is attributing either to the body or to the life, telling, okay, I am experiencing a kind of a feeling which is terminating with the life. He understands. With the breakup of the body, following the exhaustion of the life, now the body is going to die, life is going to end, now I am spending the last moments, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool right here. You see, after the death, so his mind is not further grasping anything at all. Now the body completely dies, life also ends, whatever the feeling completely terminates, the whole thing become cooled. Now this is very much like an exhaustion of the a kind of a fire. Say for example, there is a fire burning and there are various fuel being provided, but suppose at one moment One is not providing fuel at all. All the whatever firewood is taken out. Still, there may be little, a little flame still flickering up. A little warmth still comes out. Things are still happening to some extent, but you are not further giving any fuel. You are not further providing any fuel. So whatever remaining is fading away, slowly, slowly fading away. And there may be a final flame as well. And once that final flame has gone, no more flames, whatever the coal, whatever that burning charcoal, ultimately, slowly, slowly cools down. That's it. There is no further flames, there are no further burning, there is no further carrying away with future any fires. The fire has completely extinguished. Even though the fire flames are completely extinguished, there may be little warmth available in the heat available in the fire, that also cooling down, that also cools down. It's a kind of interesting area. So Buddha basically point out in this situation, and Bhikkhu Bodhi adds a note here. This shows the Arahant attitude towards the present experience. He knows that his feelings continue only as long as the body and vitality continue, and that with the perishing of the body and the extinction of vitality, all feelings will come to an end. So MP stands for Manoratha Purani, which is the commentary to the Anguttara Nikaya, explains, will become cool right here. Iddheva Siti Bhavissanti. Thus, they will become cool, devoid of the disturbance and trouble caused by the occurrence of the life process. They will never recur. This takes place right here, without his going elsewhere by way of rebirth. So the Arahant is not going to get any rebirth in the future lives. His body completely pass away, and consciousness also completely ends here. There is no grasping at all. So this is the final moment. So the final moment, basically he is fully aware. That's another interesting thing. He is not bewildered, he is not insane, or he is not unconscious, he is fully conscious. He can understand each and every bit what's going on. He's maintaining a kind of a continuous mindfulness. He can understand certain feeling. Okay, now this feeling is going to end once the body dies, once the life ends. And after that, this too will completely cease, completely cools down. Nothing more. Okay, I like to conclude today with here, and we'll take another time to explore some more aspects with respect to this sutta, and certain other areas which are doubtful, I like to take the support from other suttas. And if you have any question to ask, now you can take your time.
You have a question?
Yeah, we have a question from our side. One moment.
Yeah. Right. Masai Swaminathan. I just wanted to make a technical note on karma.
Karma?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Today we've heard the Buddha talking about not creating new karma. Mm-hmm. And eliminating the past karma.
Hmm.
Well, sometimes someone might think that there is that karma is quantifiable.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have maybe
some amount of karma.
Yeah, 50 containers of karma from the past, and today you've created 700 grams of karma.
Good.
So someone might have the impression that it's something that you finish. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, but. as I understand this concept of karma, it's the intention to discriminate or to create preference for something or prejudice against something. This intention, I believe it's called chetana, is the one that conditions the mind to do certain things, to have craving for things, or to have aversion towards some things. And this is supported by the Buddha's declaration when he attained Buddhahood. He said that now his mind is free of all sankharas.
Correct.
Therefore, no more discrimination, craving, aversion, no more future karma for him. And so I just wanted to share that. This thing about karma,
So actually, this karma-related point is something that we need to further explore. So one area, as I also mentioned, is that the in certain suttas, Buddha challenged, and certain his disciples also challenged the other ascetics. So how do you know that how much karma is still remaining? I mean, you may be torturing your body, going through some self mortification, and expecting the eradication of the karma, fading away of the karma. So how do you know that how much being already eradicated, how much is remaining? So do you have any accounts? So it's that's a question that Buddha and the disciples is asking from another person. But here in the sutta, it is mentioned that by going through it all karma again and again, so the all karma has faded away. So that contradicts in a way, isn't it? So this statement and the previous, the typical, normal, established argument of the karma has certain contradiction. So here Buddha also telling, okay, having go through the all karma through the contact again and again, it's been faded away. So how are you going to fade this away? So that there should be a criteria, there should be a methodology to abandon it. So that is the question that we need to ask. Actually, that question we need to ask. So in this sutta, the explanation is not given. So we need to explore another sutta. I'll take that sutta later. So what is or how Buddha is talking of this old karma fading away and having been contacted, that's the term, having been contacted again and again. So how this fading away has happened? So we'll look to another sutta to give the kind of a solid answer, because this sutta doesn't provide more detail about the criteria, about the methodology, and more explanation is not here. And Bhikkhu Bodhi give a fairly good explanation referring the commentaries. We'll discuss that in detail in a future session, because that's the main problem, or rather main question I also had when I'm reading this sutta. That's what I also want to take this sutta, so that we also can discuss, we can contribute, and we can look for another suttas which are giving some facts to explain this scenario. So we'll definitely take that. For the time being, I'll keep it as it is.
Fair enough.
Okay. No. You have?
No.
Okay, we don't have. Yes, yes.
Great. I really enjoy the talk. I really like the question as well prior to mine about the number of containers of karma that has been brought from past life, or you have sort of accumulated within this life.
Correct.
And how to negate it, and that is a fantastic question. I would love to hear the next sutra, which basically describes all that, which I sort of understood that you're going to talk about it at a later point. So, for today's discussion, you know, it is so profound how Buddha was saying, you know, when your mind is in a happy or sort of a lustful moment, or sort of a very negative place in your mind, or angry, or whatever it is, you have to come to the middle. So coming to the middle, you have to first understand that you are in this joyful state, and that joyful is the happy place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Always you crave into things. A person will not know how to sort of come out from that joyful, and then always wonder,
mm-hmm.
why do I have to come to the middle?
Mm-hmm.
Why not this joyful?
Correct.
Or a person who is really angry will always want to show that anger to prove his point is right or her point is right, and always go with the argument.
Correct.
But not knowing, I need to give up, I need to surrender and come to the middle, which means identify that my mind is in a cluster,
mm-hmm.
and then I need to leave. So the beauty about this sutra is, the way that I understood, not for anybody who can sort of do it, a person who sort of understands that, who appreciates the middle, the tranquil mind, how that brings that joy. And a person who has sort of gone through this type of teaching, that sort of get to a certain level. Because I remember many years ago, even though I was born to a Buddhist family, not knowing what is the philosophy of Buddhism itself, and we were just sort of doing things, getting sort of angry, and sometimes that anger sort of prolonged for a long period. Or maybe there is joy, you know, like I'm in a party and then just trying to enjoy that, not knowing how to sort of, yes, I can be in a party, but, you know, the mind, how to bring it to the center.
Mm.
I sort of see this now, which I didn't know in the past. So it's so beautiful how you talk about that as well, and how good the basic is sort of talk about. And I also think, correct me if I'm wrong, I also think this is through such a discipline. You have to discipline your thought process, your verbal process, your actions as well.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sort of keep the mind in a container per se, to train that mind. Otherwise it will never happen.
Correct. So I think I like to answer Geshan's question in different, from another point. Now say for example, someone not yet understood the middle. He haven't experienced the middle per se through Vipassana. But still he can do various methods to calm down his mind. Suppose his mind become agitated, say someone has blamed him, someone has accused him, so his mind can become agitated, now he is in angry mood. So if he is unable to immediately bring it back to the middle, because he hasn't practiced Vipassana and he couldn't yet reach the middle, now still there are various other possibilities. Now say you can do some metta, you can attribute the whole situation to karma, thinking, okay, this is my bad karma, I might have done that same thing in the past, so this is why I am reaping this result. And these are all different convincings that we do, so that we are trying to come to the middle, rather than burning with anger. So if we are able to use any of these possibilities to come to the middle, so that is actually worthy than you continuously burning yourself and basically promoting the anger. So all are not productive. Those are all harmful to oneself. Maybe you are correct, the other person may be wrong, but still you are harming yourself if you harbor the anger long and long. So therefore, wise decision is to calm down the mind by attributing some kind of a methodology. You can use metta, or you can use the whole thing as a result of a karma. So I simply have to admit because this is my bad karma. So all these are different convincing that we are using to come to the middle. So that is one stage. But the additional advantage the vipassana yogi is having is that as he continues his vipassana, he finds the middle. His mind come to the middle. It is no more a hypothetical scenario. Rather, he starts experiencing the middle because he understood all the conditionality or the different drawbacks in the conditioned phenomena. He understands all the conditioned phenomena are impermanent, all the conditioned phenomena are unable to provide me any satisfaction, and all these conditioned phenomena are anatta, non-self, they are not coming under my control. So he broadly and comprehensively understand the impermanence, non-self, suffering, all that. So as a result of that, now he is finding the middle. So etan santang etan panitang yadidang upekka, indicated in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, shows beautifully, okay, now he has the middle, he found the middle. So that is where he is not grasping anything in the world now. He is maintaining a completely unassociated mind because no point of associating any conditioned phenomena. No point of dwelling in any conditioned phenomena because they are not going to provide you any happiness, lasting happiness, because they are very vulnerable. So now you find the middle. Now the vipassana yogi has a better position, better opportunity to come to revert back to the middle easily. Suppose now he go through some kind of an argument. Someone is accusing him, someone is blaming him. So rather than he is using, okay, this may be karma, okay, I have to be patient, or I have to use metta or any of this. Rather than using those old techniques, he should be able to come to the middle because he has found the karma. He has found the middle. I think this is the greater advantage the vipassana yogi is having, because his mind has touched the middle. His mind has experienced the middle, but now it has shifted because of this, whatever the situation. But his practice should be to return back to the middle quickly as possible. As indicated by the Buddha in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, okay, you should return to the middle immediately, as quickly as possible, because you have touched the, you already have experienced the middle. Currently, it is a temporary shifting which has happened because of the situation. But you should come back to the middle again and again. Now you are associating in the middle. So further and further dwelling in the middle helps you to abandon all the defilements, because you are not promoting any past trait. Now, if we are maintaining our mind in the agitated, frustrated, angry mood, that means we are further fueling our past trait. Whatever the patiga anusaya, we are further fueling. Whatever the latent tendency to ill will, we are further fueling. But now you are withdrawing from that. As you beautifully mentioned, we surrender. Okay, we simply abandon. Okay, we understand, okay, no point of further fueling these traits, further fueling these bad habits. I better revert back. I better come back. I may be correct. He may be wrong. But no point of further I am suffering. So, okay, let me come back to the middle. So he is trying to come back, revert back to the middle. So by doing so, he's basically not strengthening the old habits. So now he is instead weakening the old habits, weakening the asavas, anusayas, and one day he is able to achieve whatever the kind of fruits of the practice. He can become a sotapanna, he can become a sakadagami, anagami, arahant. So all that are very much like on the way, on the path, in this practice. So that's why in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, after Buddha giving, stating one methodology to the typical vipassana yogi, he is giving a different scenario, different strategy to the trainee, to the seeker. A seeker maybe is sotapanna, sakadagami, anagami. So those people, Buddha say, okay, you don't need to struggle too much. Now you know the technique, you are quite confident. But unfortunately, your mind also has shifted. Be shameful about it. Attiyati harayati jiguchati. Be shameful about it. And that might be sufficient for the mind to come back, to revert back to the middle.
And then you just sort of to say, I don't verbalize it, but it just happens. I hear or I feel that my mind just talks to me.
Yeah.
And then the moment it says, just let it go and then come.
Correct.
And, so I think that is a fantastic point as well, what you brought up. And that basically. Sort of, I have understood. And another point that I wanted to bring, I think, my experience, I have seen two of my own brothers, and I have sort of hear how they are passing away, and it was very collectively, and how they have sort of gone through that process, and then, not every individual has that, maybe the luck or I think whatever the circumstances to be tranquil at the point where they want to be, especially in the last moment. So I think in a way, now those two of my brothers who practice very well, I guess, and a person who doesn't do this kind of thing will not know what is the last moment will look like.
Mm-hmm.
For us to sort of hear this, for us to, it is like we are preparing ourselves for that moment, so we know when that moment comes, how should we handle it,
mm-hmm.
rather than we struggle to life, I want to live more, and etc., so I think this is a fantastic practice. Not having this practice, you will of course going to miss that opportunity to seize that moment, I guess.
Mm.
That's one of the things that when I listen to this as well, it just talks to me.
Yeah, correct.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sannai.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Radhika for the next question.
Thank you, Bhante. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I also liked the talk today because it was very relevant to me.
Yeah.
I found that in my practice, the action is relatively easy. I mean, very hardly. Hardly I can remember breaking it for a long, long time because we grew up with the five precepts and even the speech, because we don't generally use harsh language and things like that. And now being taking the Ajiva Attamaka Sila for so long, it's much, much easier.
Mm-hmm.
But the thoughts that, and then now I have started the Indriya restraint. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't go to places that are like parties or anything like that. It's mostly there with nature, so it's a lot of restraint automatically because of our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So the two things that I have to focus on, one is the thoughts, the remembrance, sanya sankar, right,
mm-hmm.
that are coming up. Rather than the new ones, because very nicely in this he says, great effort is being put on the actions of the present and the future, right? You're careful about that. Then what you have to concentrate basically is what we call asrava or the outflows, because the karma that has been extinguished by vipaka is also on. So what is left is the ashrava, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that one that is coming up, and the identification of these thoughts, remembrances, sanya, all those things, very clearly I can see that if it's not something important, it's relatively easy to let go. But in some instances I use all the methods you say and try, right? The thoughts still come into the mind.
Right.
And keep it, the thoughts still come into the mind, even though I have told myself, tried the metta, tried the karma route, done all that. If somebody has really been nasty or done something, right?
Okay.
Then that is, I'm saying those ashravas, the ones that we have to, the thoughts and the ashrava, the effects of the past karma, right? That as it arises, how to let it go, like what you're saying, you're going to do it in the future. I have been noticing that the stronger the attachment, those are the ones that are harder to give up and let go.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other ones, even in the walking practice, I see the thoughts, but I haven't really made proper contact with them because they are not important, they are not bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones that are bothering me are the ones that are...
you are giving some priority.
Investigate things that I'm very close to, people that are... Or, yes, mostly people that I'm very close to, or something that means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So those ones... Now, I know, you said that you're going to be doing it because basically it's letting go of ashrava, right? As it arises, and it can arise because those are the ones in the wisdom training we are trying to do, the outflows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the, or I may be using the wrong word, but there seem to be a few which are coming back again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice? Because I'm trying all those methods, but when the mind is very quiet, it comes. So I know what I know theoretically what I have to do, but sometimes I'm not doing it. I have fed it or promoted it for a while before I catch it and do it. Even if I identify it and let it go, it's coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, as you said, we first have to see it and then know it and then we can take an action. So, jānato bhikkave passato āsavānaṁ khayaṁ vadāmi. So that's the statement from the Buddha in the Sabbāsava Sutta. So you should see, you should know, then there's a possibility to work it out. So there may be various strategies. So as you also mentioned, So it is not just a one method available to abandon. So Buddha comes up with 7 methods in the Sabbasava Sutta. So you may be familiar with. So that is the sutta we discuss as the very first sutta in this sutta teaching session. So 7 methods are there, Buddha explained, to abandon the asavas. So one thing is the restrainment, as we know, the sangvarapahatabba. You are maintaining kind of a sense restraint. Then the parivajjanapahatabba, you are not going to the places, not going to any, say, unwholesome states. Possibly you are trying to avoid them. So that is the parivajjanapahatabba. And then the patisevanapahatabba, whenever you are using whatever clothing, whatever other material, other requisites, you are being mindful, you are maintaining some wisdom, you know what is the purpose of using them. So basically you are trying to avoid any kind of defilements coming through that usage. Say you are using a vehicle. So probably you might feel conceited when you are going through your new vehicle. So, but you know the purpose of using a vehicle and you are beware of that defilement. And basically trying to avoid any kind of a defilement arising in the mind while going through this proper usage, mindful usage. The wise usage of the whatever the requisites. So that is the padisevana pahatabba. And then vinodana pahatabba. In case there are defilements in the mind, you are not encouraging them, you are not being a victim of them. So you are trying various methods to keep them away, let them go. Vinodana pahatabba. And then say bhavana pahatabba. So that further you are developing the enlightenment factors, you are strengthening the mind further and further, so that it becomes more reinforced and more equipped, and you have more wisdom, and it's appear like a kind of a sheath, a kind of a shield to the mind, so that the defilements are unable to penetrate, hinder or disturb, because you have a fairly strong developed enlightenment factors. That's another area. And say then the dasana pahatabba. So you know what to think, you know what not to think. So when you are using the thinking capacity, thinking faculty, you are trying to think only the proper things, and you are trying to avoid all the unwholesome way of thinking and in a way ignorant way of thinking. So when we are attributing a person to our situation, we are thinking I-centered thinking, a self-centered thinking, egocentric thinking. But now through vipassana, you are understanding, okay, there is no self as such, there is no I as such. So these are all conditioned, and things are happening because of this dependently arisen process. So as much as possible, you are now trying to avoid this I-making, mind-making, conceit, I am, all that. You are trying to abandon. So the dasana pahatabba is another area, based on the wisdom that you are handling the mind in a very careful way. You do a kind of a proper healthy mental culture. And what are the type of thoughts that the mind is going through? What are the ones I am promoting? What are the ones I have to abandon? So a fairly mindful living is necessary to reprogram the mind. Because mind is used to strengthen the ego. Mind is used to strengthen the self. But through vipassana you understood the non-self. Now you are trying to living according to it. Rather than promoting a self, as much as possible now you are trying to promote the non-self. Living through non-self. Practically using the non-self to abide by. So these are very interesting areas for us to look at. So how are we going to practically use the Buddha's teaching to abandon the defilements, so that the mind become cool, calm, relaxed, not grasping anything in the world, and not making any I, not making any person, not making any self.
Thank you so much. Yes, I kind of know what I have to do sometimes.
Mm.
I get carried away when the mind is quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward for the next time that you're going to
teach. Good. Yeah.
Thiruvan Sannai, thank you so much.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sannai.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Priya for the next question.
Thiruvan Sannai, Bhante.
Yeah.
Bhante, I got answers to questions I had from previous discussions, but I want to let you know that, through your teachings, I used methods you told me that metta and karma and everything, but I realized that they are definitely temporary solutions, like keeping the bowl under the water by force. And but with practice, I have to work and live with my children, my husband, and none of them are practicing, unfortunately. It doesn't mean that I am better than them. In some aspects, actually, I think they are more advanced than I am. but I had to go to watch films with them, go to do other stuff with them, so I can't avoid family life. So I'm doing those things, but I'm always aware of my, most of the time, aware of my mind condition. So when I watch a film with them, sometimes my mind like it a lot, so I get attached. So I watch how it get attached, and then I don't try forcefully to avoid it. But while I watch it, it goes away. And even at the work, you know, I had to associate various type of people, work with various type of people, and especially when in front of when work with people with very high ego, my ego is coming out strongly. So especially at a meeting or something like that, when they say something or ask questions, and I want to, you know, make self out of my thing, and then I see it coming. And at first, when it happened, I feel really bad, you know, really embarrassed. But now I don't, because I mean, it happened, I see it. Sometimes even I see it happen, and then I realize it, and then I know this is part of the practice, so I should not take it as a bad thing or regret about it. And then I develop equanimity right there. That is how the mind is, because I'm not perfect yet, and I'm in this world, and I have to do that.
Correct.
And so even today, I had really, really busy days, so my mind was chaotic, and I wasn't mindful, because things didn't go the way I wanted, and a student broke something, and then it was a chaos, and then my mind was really, really agitated. And then when I woke out, and I thought, okay, it was really agitated. I wasn't mindful at all. And then but again, I did not regret, and I came to the car, and I sat there, and then I watched my. I went to my body and watched my mind, and I drive mindfully, and then after came home, and then I listened to your Dhamma, and then I calmed down. So that is how it is. It is not right like easy thing. It is a struggle, but it's definitely moving forward.
Correct.
So I'm asking you whether I'm doing the right thing.
I think yes, definitely. So that's the situation for most of us. So it is not a very smooth path, smooth in the sense completely friction-free, straight line that we have to go through, that we all go through these kinds of ups and downs, what we Buddha called as the vicissitudes of the life, or the ups and downs of the life, atalo dhamma. So that everybody has to go through, and how well we are handling those. So how quickly are we able to return to the middle? So that is where showing the maturity of our practice. So at the beginning, we may spend a fair amount of time being unable to return to the middle. But later, as a result of our continuous practice, one may understand, okay, now I can come to the middle quite easily. Later, one might even understand, okay, I don't need to do something. Mind has become agitated, but now it is returning to the middle by itself. So likewise, very gradual development or training of the mind is something that one can witness as one is continuing in one's path. And more one feel calm, more and more one feel relaxed. And as Buddha points out here, and whatever the bodily conduct which are promoting the defilements, now we are not doing. Whatever the verbal conduct which are further promoting those bad habits, you are not engaging with. Whatever the mental conduct which are further promoting, further strengthening the defilements, now you are not doing. So in a way, kind of a restrainment is also there. Sila is also there in the picture. But you, as a result of all these, you are experiencing kind of inner peace. inner calmness, inner contentment, and you feel, okay, I'm doing well now. I am feeling confident. So that is the takeaway, in a way, as a result of the practice. So internally you become more peaceful. Externally there may be disturbances happening, but internally you feel composed, you feel content, you feel happy, calm, relaxed. So that is the, in a way, something that we can be happy about our practice.
Yes, Bhante, one thing I want to add, when a very strong emotion comes to my mind, I become really mindful, either mindful about, maybe I'm strongly watching my mind, or whatever what I'm doing, I become really mindful. Then I can separate myself from that, and then I become really peaceful. I can, it's no longer me. It's like I'm the watcher, I'm the observer, and it's like mind stop. Like it's become completely going to a different state, and that helps me a lot. Bhante, you helped me with that. You asked me to do Chitta Anupassana. That's what I'm doing. I'm almost all the time watching my mind. So when very strong emotion, when it comes, now I can separate myself from that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah.
Teruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sarnai.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Dr. Shika for the next question.
Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
Bhante, I have a question. I want to know if maybe an arhat or suvan or anagami person is in a state of drowsiness due to being given medication for the pain, what will happen then? Will he regain consciousness? He's not fully unconscious, but he's always semi-drowsy.
Actually, as far as we can see from the suttas and some evidence in the suttas, actually arahant can go through some bodily suffering, as it happened even to the Buddha, to Venerable Moggallana, Venerable Kassapa. We can see that they are telling, okay, it is unbearable bodily pain that I am experiencing. So that means such bodily pains they can go through. But we can't find any evidence from the suttas that they are in a kind of a drowsy state, or any defiled state. We can't find such any of these suttas, any evidence.
So that means they won't regain consciousness where they will be fully aware of their death.
Yeah, so basically they are able to maintain the full awareness. So that is something we can see. And even Buddha highlights that, and Buddha advice using that. Say, for example, in the Mahasunyata Sutta. So all the abiding of the emptiness, Buddha promotes with the clear comprehension. Tato tatta sampajana kari hoti. Tatta sampajana kari hoti. So you are mindful, you are clearly comprehending at that time. Again and again Buddha emphasized, so this clear comprehension, full awareness is available in one's mind. It is not a kind of a trance that one is being, rather he is fully aware of what is happening. So that may be the reason that the arahant, when he is going through the final moment, final breath, final feeling, still he is fully aware. Okay, this is the final feeling. This will terminate at the end of the death, at the end of the body, at the end of the life. So this is the final. So likewise, he is maintaining very clear comprehension about the situation. So I feel that is more important than telling, okay, he is in a trance, he is in a jhana, is in concentration. So rather than telling so, it is quite reasonable to say he is fully aware what's going on right now.
So even if the person is drowsy, he'll come back to his fully awareness. That's what you're saying?
So why are you particularly asking about the drowsiness?
Because I have Parkinson's, some nonsense.
Right.
So I was just wondering that if I've been given indication to be surgical, whether how it will work.
I understand. Because I know that the Parkinson has, typically people are giving some strong medicine. So this medicine definitely produces some drowsiness in one's mind. So actually my mother herself had the Parkinson, and I can remember that she is somewhat drowsy when she is taking these medicine, because they are pretty strong, carbidopa, levodopa, as far as I can remember. So anyway, that may be a different situation, that the medication has taken his mind to a certain drowsiness. That we can understand. I think that is a temporary state.
So, but I mean, a person with the illness also can, if it's just drowsy, not unconscious, can become, have the truly mindful state.
Yeah, I feel like that. So, I mean, you know that the mind is drowsy, certain amount of awareness is available. By the way, I'll ask another question. As a result of this medication, are you experiencing some hallucinations?
I'm controlling myself without going off on the medication. Because I have problems when they change and increase the dose.
Correct.
Because they are my mind got fully mixed up and it was not in a good state. So I prefer calm down and bear the pain and all without increasing the medication. So I still sometimes, if the medication is not there, like every 3.5 to 4 hours I have to be on medication. If when that wanes off, I can have a little bit of unsteadiness, feeling a little bit sleepy, drowsy, but my mind is at the moment okay because I'm not taking a higher dose.
Right.
I choose not to.
Right. Because I can remember that when I was reading the kind of side effects of this medicine. So they have indicated the possibility of having hallucinations.
Hallucinations, you get addiction, you get depression, all that. So once they put me on a different drug, I have a lot of suicidal thoughts, anxiety and all that.
I see.
So I said I don't want it.
Right.
And so I have a problem because I'm not taking any other drugs.
Right.
So I'm suffering with pain, but that's because I have done the medication and learned before. That's helping me a lot.
Correct. Yeah. Thanks for sharing all these experiences, because these are something that the life is providing us. So it's sometimes unavoidable and we don't know what is available in the future. So this is something, reality, that we all have to face with. And actually Dhamma helping to face all these ups and downs and giving some maturity, some confidence is quite worthy. Because otherwise we become helpless, we feel completely agitated, we feel kind of abandoned or lost. But before that happen, having some help, so having some assistance, some strength from the Dhamma is very, very important. And you are giving some courage to everyone that, okay, you develop yourself before you arrive this kind of a stage, and then you are at least you feel some inner safety.
Also, one husband says that the days that I do meditation, that he sees a difference because I am not so educated, or my movements are controlled and my behavior is very much better. The days I miss, it's totally different. So the meditation helps a lot.
Correct.
To calm the mind, yes.
Correct.
It's very, very useful. And I'm so glad that I started that, otherwise I don't know where I would have been.
Correct.
It's such a depressing state.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your advice. And all these last sutras have helped me a lot. And I'm very grateful I have the opportunity to listen to that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we have spent almost 1.5 hours, so I think now it's the time to conclude the session. I like to invite Venerable Dhammosiddha for sharing of merits.
Now, Sai Swaminathan, we are very fortunate to be constantly receiving this Dhamma from the Buddha, exhorting us to observe everything with equanimity. Whatever arises, whether mental or physical, it is impermanent. And once we observe with equanimity, we will be able to weather all these difficulties of life and experience that cessation, that dispassion that leads to Nibbana. Gathering here, listening and teaching that Dhamma, very fortunate, very meritorious. So we would like to share these merits with our teachers, parents, all the devas. May our relatives rejoice in these merits. May all the devas rejoice in these merits. May all celestial beings protect this Dhamma and the Buddha Sasana for a long time. And may the seeds of Dhamma that we have received continue growing, producing path, fruition, and Nibbana. Now let us recite the traditional Pali verses for the sharing of merits. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti sindhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti sindhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mang param. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Idam no ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.